So let's get started this morning, trying to stay on time. Our seems to be an orthography session, so very interesting set of papers. And the first one is Connecting Communities in the Making of the Subanon, Standard Orthography by William Hall and are you Sharon Estioka? Okay, thank you.
Malongasi Salam, that's good morning in Subanon. I'm Sharon. I'm a native Subanon, and he is William, a Native American Subanon.
The Subanon orthography has had a long history. It has undergone a long process before its approval by the government to make it official. This is the outline of our presentation this morning. First, we will introduce you to the Subanon language. Then we will briefly state the principles for orthography development. Following that, we will present the history of the Subanon orthography, focusing on how the Subanons collaborated for their orthography to gain its official status. And we will end our presentation with some concluding remarks.
Subanon is an endangered Austronesian minority language spoken by approximately 300,000 people in scattered communities in the on the Zamboanga Peninsula in the Philippines. Subanon is one of the 8 Subanon languages, and it has 3 aerial dialects, Malayal Sinubanon, Shokan Sinubanon, and Gutalak Boligian Sinubanon, and I speak the Malayal Sinubanon. The word Subanon refers to the people, and the term Sinubanon refers to the language.
The basic principles that we used for establishing Subanon orthography are similar to those described by Cahill and Karan. Linguistically sound, acceptable to all stakeholders, teachable, and easy to reproduce.
The history of the Subanon orthography development is divided into 4. From 1964 to 1972, we refer to this as the initial development. And from 1973 to 1993, we refer to this as the refining of the orthography period. From 1994 to 2018, that's the non-official standard orthography. And from January 2019 to eternity, we call it official standard orthography. First, we want to define what we mean by non-official standard orthography and official standard orthography. In the Philippine context, non-official standard orthography means that its spelling rules are linguistically sound and that is, it is accepted by its native speakers. And official standard orthography means that it is approved by the Department of Education of the Philippines.
From 1964 to 1972, we refer to this as the initial development period. In 1964, we started learning Subanon in Siokon. After doing preliminary phonological and some basic grammatical analysis, we began straight away to devise an orthography. This is what we discovered as far as the principal sounds. The Subanon language has 15 consonants and 5 vowels. This is an example of the initial orthography, which we also call the working orthography. We changed the final G of the case markers Og, Nog, and Sog according to the beginning sound of the following word. And we wrote the final G of the case marker Og, Nog, and Sog before the L, resulting in the GL cluster, because that's the way the people pronounce these. We erroneously separated the morphemes of the oblique pronouns, such as dianakon, and you can see that here. From 1973 to 1993, we call it the refining the orthography period. In 1973, we moved to Malayal due to martial law. When we lived there, dialectal differences became apparent. And there also we discovered that the school teachers in Malayal were writing their language using the same symbols that we had proposed, but they did not symbolize glottal stop with its own symbol. Instead, they used H to represent it. And they had problems with how to write the sound changes that occur and making spelling rules. This is an example of a text, the creation story, written in the working orthography at that time. We had already begun to make some changes. For example, G of O Nogen So was now written with all ending in G, and we correctly wrote the oblique pronouns as one word. Within this period, the first community meeting about the orthography was held in Malayal. It was attended by the supervisor, who was a native Subanen, the school teachers, local government officials, and the community people. There was agreement about the symbols and some spelling rules. For example, they agreed that the glottal stop should be represented by an apostrophe and not by H.
And these were the linguistic issues that they had to deal with. Example, agentive voice affixes combination. Is it umin or inum? And then some morphophonemic changes. The G in the verbal affixes, mig, mog, pig, pog, assimilates to the manner of articulation or manner or place of articulation of the beginning sound of a root. And they also struggled with how to write the, are they going to write the G before nominalized roots where it is audible in roots beginning with the alveolar lateral approximants and vowels, but it's not audible in roots that begin with other sounds. And they had to deal with the alternation at that time of A and O. In Subanen, we have two patterns of A and O alternation. One is the A becomes O in the prepenultimate syllable, and the other one, the O becomes A in penultimate syllable, following affixation of the voice markers an, on, and oi. And they had to decide whether to combine the spelling rules involving the two single vowel pronouns.
From 1994 to 2018 is what we call the non-official standard orthography period. Much had happened regarding the orthography. The non-official standard orthography was used to produce traditional stories and instructional materials for adult literacy classes.
In 2009, the Department of Education of the Philippines implemented the Mother Tongue-Based Multilingual Education, also known as MTB-MLE, which mandated the use of all mother tongues as the media of instruction and as a separate course to teach starting from preschool to third grade. Now, there are about 179 languages in the Philippines, and most of them do not have a writing system. But we did not panic when the order was issued because we already established the orthography of the language, except that it was not yet official. And these are the political issues that we had to deal with. Upon the MTB-MLE implementation, the Department of Education gave funding for the creation of the instructional materials for the major languages, but they never gave funding for the minority languages like Subanen to produce their instructional materials. And there was conflict between the Department of Education and the Commission on the Filipino Language. At that time, the Commission on the Filipino Language wanted that all orthographies of the minority languages be patterned after the Tagalog orthography. But the Subanen teachers and many other minority language teachers refused to follow the KWF's proposal.
But the most critical thing that we had to deal with was that in 2017, the DepEd and the Indigenous Peoples Education of the Region 9 wanted that all eight Subanen languages have one orthography. However, finally, they were convinced to reconsider their desire for one orthography for all Subanen languages, because each one has its own sound system. So in 2017 and 2018, a series of three orthography workshops were held by the regional level Department of Education. The Subanen community leaders and teachers attended. The aim was to polish the spelling rules and to make the DEP ed at the government level, national level, to approve the orthography in order to make it official. So on January 11, this past January 2019, the Subanen community in Malayal initiated a gathering where the standard version of the Subanen orthography was formally approved by the Department of Education and formally accepted by the community. The event was attended by Subanen community teachers, tribal leaders, and the Department of Education staff from the Division of Zamboanga del Norte, and the officials of the Indigenous Peoples Education. That day was very significant because it was the day the Subanen orthography was made official.
So now we have an orthography that we are proud of because it is now official. And we continue to use it to produce more instructional materials in the language and to teach it to the Subanens, especially to the younger generations. And these are our concluding remarks.
It's not easy to develop a linguistically sound, easy to teach and use orthography, especially when the community leaders do not have a linguistic background and often have different personal and ideological values. However, through helpful and affirming assistance where needed, freely sharing expertise and experience, the community can come together to solve their problems. And even though the Subanen people are divided by mountains, rivers, and even without government funding, they have united to come up with an acceptable and approved standard orthography.
During the signing of the official Subanen orthography, a Subanen educator said, "Our orthography represents our Subanen language. It is not designed to be a bridge to learning another language." Although this quote may sound negative, but clearly this indicates the love and pride of the Subanens for their language. Salamat sa Panginoong Hugyu.
Thank you very much for listening.
Following the Subanen tribal leaders and teachers, although they are not here, the Department of Education Region 9, the Indigenous People Education Region 9, and SIL Philippines. Thank you once again.
We have a lot of time for questions.
William is ready to answer all your questions.
Sharon and William both. So I do have a question, something that really struck me as being interesting and kind of puzzling, and that is when you have the double infixation with the and the N, you say you are unsure which order to put it in. Is that because there's cross-speaker variation within the Malayal community? Really?
Well, actually, I didn't hear it. It was very interesting. When we learned Subanen, I learned it one way, because most of the community spoke it that way. And when we went to Malayal, there were a number of people who reversed that sequence. And so I wonder what to do. People didn't seem to, it didn't seem to make any difference to them. And so what we did was we printed out a short story. And then one of these paragraphs, we had it written one way, one sequence. In another paragraph, we had it written in another sequence. And we had people read it. And they, whichever way they read it all consistently. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And it come to find out, they read it as they spoke it.
Uh-huh.
So it didn't make any difference. They saw what they spoke.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting.
So for people who don't know, one of those is a voice marker and the other is an aspect marker. And cross-linguistically, you see this right across the Austronesian family for Philippine-type languages. One language will have it one way, the other language will have it the other way.
Oh,
so it's very interesting to me that you have it within the same community.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's not an orthographic issue, though.
No.
Right. Well, in a sense, it is, because how to have it standard, a standard rule, Do we write it this way? Which way do we write it?
Well, I mean, your sound letter correspondences determine how it would be written. And that would depend on how they said it.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, compare that to the morphophonemic issue that involved like the Moog. So there, you're not directly representing the pronunciation at all,
right.
If I understand.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was your final decision, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, externally.
Yes. What does that mean, externally?
Well, I mean it for the Ognogin Sog.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's outside of
the words. of the word itself.
Right.
But the verb with the affixes,
right.
We made the change.
Right. But there you chose to have a single sort of underlying form.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
Right. Right. But you can't do that when there are two separate morphemes, one involving aspect, one involving voice, and they occur in opposite orders. You can't, I don't think, you can do it the same way.
Yeah, as it turns out, they write it whatever way they speak it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right, and that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes, great, thank you.
So I was very curious about the morphemes that ended in G and what you did with them, so I want to ask about that, but I also wanted to first of all follow up with what you said. I actually work in sociolinguistics and variation. We do this in English as well, right, with two-part verbs. We could either have the second part of the verb next to, so pick up could either be next to, like run up the street, could either be next to run or at the end. And there are discourse reasons why we might do one or the other, but some are personal preferences probably as well, and we cope with it just fine.
Yeah,
it's more of an issue of whether there is a standard or not. It's a literacy issue and a standardization issue of the language, and it may not cause any red flags. It said it doesn't sound like it is. So that's one issue. The other, I am really curious about the final G because the endangered language I work on also has a similar problem with assimilation of a final consonant and how to write it. So how did you come to make the decision you made on that?
We had a problem. We noticed the problem of being consistent because sometimes they wrote it, they didn't follow the rule where it would change.
How did it change?
Well, it changed like for instance, let me have an example there. Like if the following word began with a K,
it becomes so.
Then it becomes ok. Or nok or sok.
Okay.
If it begins, if the following word begins with a nasal, then it becomes om, nok,
okay.
Song.
So assimilation.
Yeah.
Okay. So you decided to write it with a G.
We did.
Because then people wouldn't have to pay attention to what they were saying; they could just have one underlying form.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You had a hand.
Yeah, so have you experienced any difficulties representing the orthography digitally, like through computers or phones or any of that kind of stuff?
No problem whatsoever.
No problem.
Nice.
Yeah, it works out very nicely. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I've got a question about the global stop. So first of all, does Filipino represent the global stop?
No, the Tagalog orthography, it does not represent the glottal stop, although it's a phoneme. It's phonemic in almost all Philippine type languages.
And so then the follow-up is, have you had any difficulty having the apostrophe accepted in the Sabanon community to represent the glottal stop?
No, based on what he told me, because I wasn't born at that time yet, he said he, as a linguist, he suggested the real glottal stop, but they said, it looks like the ear, so they didn't like it. So easy to use, that's what they want, the apostrophe. So they settled on that.
And then this has been accepted by the community?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Another comment on that is that a lot of the people don't write it. Sometimes they'll write it, sometimes they won't. If the Tagalog orthography is instilled in them, they most likely won't write it. But it there's something missing, and so they very often don't put it down. So, yes, sir.
Just a brief correction. Tagalog does represent the glottal stop in final position, but only through diacritics on the vowels, because the Spanish didn't have any symbol for a glottal stop, and that's how they did it.
Yes.
In the writing system?
Yes. Yeah, they did. Mm-hmm. See, they didn't even learn it.
No, yeah, when we were taught Tagalog, I'm sorry, I'm just answering the question based on my experience. So we were taught Tagalog from first grade. We were never taught the glottal stop, so that's why I said.
But it's represented by diacritics on the vowels.
That's right.
Either an acute accent or
you
a
learned
accent.
Tagalog so much. I never learned.
Yes.
I was just interested in the organizing the community aspect at the beginning. Especially, I'm also from an oral language. So, like, thinking of like language in terms of segment, it's like really hard. So I don't know if you had to do any like training for the community members to like understand like consonants and vowels, or they had some experience, or they speak or write other languages.
The community that we first went to was largely made up of illiterate people. Both children did not go to school. It's the reason why we went there, so that we could learn the culture as well. They practiced their traditional culture, and those who had school knew about nouns and some of the terminology. But basically, we were the ones as linguists who went in and did the analysis and all that sort of thing, and came up with words, and then we used those, what our analysis, we typed out some of their traditional stories. And one anecdote, we had done this, we typed it out and had it on the table, and a fellow who had a grade two education came in, and they're very curious, and he sat down and looked at the paper, and he started reading it in his mind, and he stopped, and he said to us, "I understand this." And he went back and he started reading it with interest, because he actually understood what he was reading. So, we didn't elicit from the people themselves about this. We were the instigators in that sense. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah. We have plenty of time for more questions, because we don't have the next paper until 9:40, and we need at least 5 more minutes before this. So anybody else?
Sure. Yeah, I got really excited when I saw a GB there, because I love labiovelars, but then when you say it's not audible, my hopes were crushed, but that's all right. I was really interested in the previous question about the degree of community involvement, and they had all the teachers involved at one time, but it seems like it's really evolved over the years tremendously like that. We have a long period of development of the orthography. At first, it seems like there was not very much. It was basically you, I guess. But toward the end there, you had the teachers, and there was another group there. How did they get organized, and how did they get selected for this? And what was their actual part in approving whatever?
that's all part of our actual paper. We didn't include it all in here. In the three areas, dialect areas, One of them was populated by very progressive people, and they took advantage of education and went to school and became professionals. And they tried to write their language. They began to write their language. One fellow actually tried to translate part of the Bible, and they wrote some hymns, and they tried to write some essays about some of their culture. But when we went down to that area, to Sharon's area in Malayal, they were happy that we were there because they had all of these problems. And so that's where we fit in. And they had initiated that in their particular area. And then it slowly moved up, but into the other areas. But there were a lot of issues that they wanted to interact with us. And they were the ones who got the community together down there. And we discussed these things, and I was able to help them out in some ways. But they were, this was an interest of them. So there wasn't, it wasn't an expat coming in and developing this for them, you know, so.
There's a little follow-up. This may be more for Sharon. At one point you said you're proud of the orthography because now it's official.
Yes.
Were you proud of it before it was official?
I was, sorry about that. I'm already proud of it, like even before knowing them. And it was just a sad thing that we were not taught the orthography when we were like in elementary. So like I'm proud of my language. I'm proud that even if my orthography before wasn't official yet. So actually, the things that happened between 2014 while I'm here in Hawaii to 2019, it's for me it's like a miracle because I thought it's gonna be impossible. It's impossible because it's hard for the Department of Education. It's so hard to gain approval of the Department of Education, who is the approving organization of all the orthographies in the Philippines, because they are the authority. So they said, and yeah, it takes time. And they want to see if your orthography is linguistically analyzed. So yeah. And we are just, I'd say fortunate that there's a linguist trained in the U.S. who has analyzed our language and helped us to come up with this orthography. Yeah.
So one more follow-up is, since it's been approved by the Department of Education, is it being used in the schools officially right now? And how do you see that? You mentioned that you thought it was an endangered language. How would this affect the endangerment status?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's being used now. Even if it wasn't approved yet, it's being used since 2009 in production of instructional materials. This is very helpful because I am doing documentation of my language and I can use the orthography in the transcription.
Easier.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
One more.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I had two quick questions. One, I'm assuming the vitality level is fairly high for the shift. Is there a language shift happening?
Okay, this is an interesting question because the vitality level is different in different areas. Yeah. In the Malayal area, it is probably 6A. In the Siokon area where I learned, it's probably 7 or lower. Okay. And on the fringes, it's lower.
Higher, I guess. Right.
Yes.
And so that brings up the second question. So if there's some shift happening, there was that comment at the end about language not being used as a step towards L2 literacy. Is that not happening where it's shifting?
Okay. I will answer that. That quote is because the Subanan teachers are so angry about the KWO's proposal that they want our orthography be like Tagalog orthography, so that's why they said it. It's based on that. Like, this is not a bridge to learn another language. We have, this is my language, this is it. Yes, thank you so much. All, I know we did not answer all your questions, but yeah, thank you for listening.
Okay, we will start up again at 9:40. So our presenter
here.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot it was you. Yes.